friends. You're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA. We are delighted to take our microphones up to Yonkers and to Sandra Feeney Charles, who is the director of the Aisling Irish Center, the Aisling Irish Community Center in Yonkers. And Sandra, you're very welcome indeed.
Thank you very much, Adrian. It's great to be here with you.
Now, it's we have had you know, over the last few weeks we've spoken you know, with the heads of the organizations that have you know, gotten together to make up the umbrella organization of Sláinte. But before we get to that, I'd like to talk about, and maybe I'll preface this by saying, you know, that the history of the Aisling Irish Community Centre is amazing. And some of us, you would be too young for that, but some of us who were around were widely impressed with Cheer na Nóg, the Land of Youth. It started in St. Barnard's, or no, I was actually saying to Brendan's Parish in the Bronx, and it was run by Sister Edna MacNicholas and Father Tom Flynn. And they were part of a small group of Irish chaplains sent to the United States to help Irish immigrants. That was back in the 80s. Now, and they did an amazing job, indeed, in getting it off. But it was, if we come to the early 90s, the Aisling Irish Community Centre, well named because it was a community group who got together to, indeed, independent of Catholic charities, you know, who were mostly running the first organization. But they decided to do something and get their, you know, get the organization into an area where the Irish had moved, you know, from Woodlawn, Yonkers, that whole area there. And that was, as I remember it, that was the beginning of what was going to be an amazing, helpful Irish community and a cultural center in Yonkers. Now, you can take it from there.
Well, I couldn't have said it better myself, Adrian. Your history is, excuse me, spot on. And you brought it up through the 80s and then towards the late 90s, under their leadership, the local community members got together and created this establishment, one unit of a three-unit building called the Aisling Irish Community Centre. And at that time, their whole goal was to accommodate the needs of the newly arriving Irish immigrants here in New York. But many of those people found themselves here with no family, maybe not even having any friends, so they needed a place to go where they could ask for help finding accommodation and hopefully finding work. And that's exactly what they found here at the Aisling Centre in the very early days. And then as things developed, there became, you know, a greater need for a little bit of culture. There was a fabulous group called the Irish Volunteers for the Homeless, which existed prior to the Aisling Centre, who have made the Aisling Centre their home. And in the last number of years, as the community has changed and the needs of the community has changed, so the Aisling Centre has moved with the times. And we now have a phenomenal cultural program with Irish dance, Irish music. We have a ballad group, a Ceilidh band. We have a tremendous, vibrant senior group. The Young at Heart group has about 100 members. They come twice a week for their hot lunch. And we have chair yoga and a book club for the seniors. And then, of course, we have all the physical activities with kids, karate, and a number of other sports, and the phenomenal Team Aisling, which has encompassed physical well-being and mental well-being and community engagement, and combined all of that to promote health and mindfulness and encourage people to literally get off the couch and then at their own level try and make their way to a 5K, whether it's running or walking.
Yeah.
And some of them even have run marathons. And that has all been in support of the Ashling Centre. So there's a wide array, and that doesn't even cover,
that covers
about 50% of what we do. There's a whole social services component. So the point is that the centre has grown as the community has grown, and, you know, we try to do what we can to meet the community needs of the day.
You know, I think it would be fair to say that, the Ashling Centre there is, in fact, that is the hub of a community that has thrived in the area, and I'm sure that a lot of the restaurants, the bars, the construction industry, all of that is still identified. I know that there are many changes that have taken place there, but that is placed and is supported, and your services are needed, but mostly by the people who are right within walking distance of it. But that's only the beginning. Your services have been, they have stretched to places much further afield, and you're there. You're the from the Bronx into Yonkers, into
up into Rockland County, you could say.
Yeah.
And out into Queens. And not, in the spirit of community. Not to, let's put it this way, we have a very good working relationship with all of the other Irish centres in New York.
Yes.
So we all have our own programs. Team Ashling does stretch from Queens through the Bronx, up through Yonkers and up to Rockland County. And there are, different needs being met by the different centres and the different communities. But we do come together and work very effectively because that's what we're here for. We're here to meet the needs of the community. And the needs of the local community right now have obviously very much changed. As you just mentioned, that we typically meet the needs of the people on our street and close by and within walking distance. Any Tuesday or Friday, up until the 13th of March, you could find 60 seniors in here on Tuesday afternoon having lunch. And today that's not possible, of course. So working with the local community, we have a number of lovely restaurants and delis close by that we have a really good working relationship with. And these are the establishments that would have rotated a donation of hot food occasionally, maybe once a month to help us provide a good nutritious meal for our seniors. And now the shoe is on the other foot. These are the establishments that we're, I guess, giving back to in a way, because now we're purchasing the food that we deliver to our seniors. We're doing doorstep delivery to our seniors of hot lunch twice a week. Since they can't come to us, we take the food from them, and we're in a way helping our local establishments that might otherwise be struggling somewhat by supporting them, purchasing the meals from them. And I think there's a lot of that happening in the community. This is a very closely, tight-knit community, and we're all in it together.
Now, you're no stranger indeed to the line of work that was necessary for you to move careers into the Ashling Irish Centre. You spent way more than a decade in the humanitarian Irish international humanitarian relief organization, which was
Concern Worldwide,
and
yes,
and it was also founded by an Irish priest. Two priests, actually, the brothers, the Finucane brothers. Yeah.
The Lord have mercy on them both, Father Jack and Angus Finucane, two great Limerick men, along with a number of others, founded Concern in response to the famine in Biafra. And again, due to the generous nature of the people of Ireland, they were able to charter cargo boats and take them full of supplies out to the, you know, war-torn and famine-stricken country of Biafra. And then they brought that back, that spirit of giving and caring and concern grew from strength to strength. And it was a wonderful experience to be involved with that organization. I learned so much, particularly from Father Angus, who was our regular visitor every year, although he lived in Limerick. He spent a couple of months with us every summer. And he taught us a lot about compassion and professionalism. You were very much encouraged to go for a jar on Friday night, but you were certainly expected to be at your desk with your shirt on and your sleeves rolled up on Monday morning. So there's a very good precedent for a very strong work ethic, a lot of compassion and, you know, humanitarian approach. So I think it was a good experience. And it also gave me a lot of exposure to good people in New York, people who are generous and kind and care about the money that they contribute. They want assurance that it's being spent wisely and that there is a level of accountability. So I think that gave me a really good foundation for joining the Ashton Community Centre, where, you know, we bring all those skills with us and put them to the best use possible.
No, it's also, and again, the Fanukans and concern, it also gave many of us, you know, an insight into the work of missionaries, because Irish missionaries for generations, you know, went throughout the world. And, you know, we were, some of us were of the opinion that they went out, you know, like they went out with a big stick to beat the Catholic religion into all of these pagans. How, you know, that was indeed an eye-opener when Concern actually got off the ground, because it did let us know that, no, that wasn't the purpose. Our missionaries went around the world, indeed, to help people. And it was not, it might have been perceived as a vehicle to spread the faith, but in fact, it was definitely such a major contributor to charitable work that had demo to do with religion.
Absolutely. It was a greater need. The greater need was the humanitarian crises that they met, and the needs and welfare during humanitarian crisis. And then beyond that, the development of those underprivileged and underserved communities. You know, they started up way back before the words micro-industry were even known, before that was considered cool or the thing to do. The Fanukan brothers were creating micro-industries in Bangladesh, where they provided micro-loans to severely impoverished women to make small textiles and little fabric products in their own homes that they could sell to buy food for their family. And then the more industrious were able to save up enough money to send their children to school. And that had nothing to do with the dispersal of religion, but if it came into play, I guess it was an added bonus, but they certainly did pave the way. And one of the things that I remember from Father Angus is his ability to listen. And it's amazing how that has resonated throughout the years in different arenas. On one occasion, it was at one of the corporate dinners. One of the honoree on that particular evening was Elie Wiesel, the infamous Holocaust survivor. And the one thing I took away from that night was the importance of listening and knowing that somebody cares. He explained in great detail, in harrowing detail, how to feel like you've been left and forgotten by the rest of the world is one of the most difficult things to bear. Even more difficult than not having enough food or water. That sat with me somewhere in the back of my mind. And knowing that somebody cares, he reminded us, gives a person hope. To know that somebody listening means that all is not lost. And even today, and this is several years later, it's still in my mind, and although what we're doing for a lot of people these days is providing, you know, physical support in the form of whether it's financial support to help with rent or whether it's access to the food pantry, I had the privilege of speaking with a young Irish lady who had been working in a bar downtown, which had closed, and I asked her how she was managing. Her two roommates had quickly left to return to Ireland within the first 2 weeks of March. She said she had a bag packed and she was ready to go if the worst came to the worst. But then she heard about Sláinte, and she knew that if things got really, really bad, she could ask for help. She didn't need it just yet, but just knowing that there was an organization there who was listening and heard and cared about the hundreds of undocumented Irish that are still here that had fallen beneath the radar because, you know, let's face it, things have been pretty good in New York for the last number of years. And the undocumented Irish had, for a lot of reasons, good reasons, had fallen off the radar. And all of a sudden, because of the complete closure of the hospitality industry, you know, 80% of the people that we've been hearing from actually do work in the hospitality industry, and there's no access to government support. They're not legal. Even if they have a tax ID, they don't qualify for unemployment, and they really have nowhere to turn. So after 2 or 3 months of living off their savings and borrowing off friends, they are faced with the decision of leaving everything that they worked so hard for behind and returning to Ireland, or maybe, just maybe, somebody's listening, and that's where Sláinte 2020 comes into play. So I have to say I'm very proud to have had the privilege, an ongoing privilege, of working with individuals from 4 other organisations. We have Michael Riley from the United Irish Counties Association,
yes.
Siobhan Dennehy from the Emerald Isle, Paul Finnegan, the New York Irish Centre, Katrina Clark, our founding member, the president of the, or the chairperson of the Ashling Irish Centre, and then Joan Hinchy, of the recently elected female president of the GAA here in New York, and myself have, you know, we got together and did what you need to do. We got our sleeves rolled up. We realized very quickly that there was a very high proportion of individuals still living in New York, faced with the decision of remaining or hopping on a plane. And, you know, we realized that we were all in a similar circumstance at one stage. We all arrived here with a bag in our back and a one-way ticket and got good welcome when we arrived from maybe the Ashling Central or maybe the Emerald Isle. We all got a start somewhere and a helping hand. And that's what it's about. Irish people have a history of, you know, like the naissance of concern. It was generous people giving what they could to support a country that was in desperate need. And Sláinte is really following in the same footpath. It's organizations and individuals who are digging deep in their pockets and putting what they can into the salmon pot, and we're doing what we can. We're not meeting everybody's needs by any stretch of the imagination, but we are offering a helping hand to the people that know that they, with a little bit of support, can tough it out until life returns to normal. And we have some great, great people. Shane Humphreys, another member of the steering committee, a wonderful lawyer who's been working very hard behind the scenes to try and get people back to work. So we're in a position to offer some financial support to help people meet just the basics, maybe a portion of their rent and some money for utilities and food, and where possible, offer somebody a job. And then there's the social services component of our work, which really comes directly through the centres. You know, there's a lot of mental stress and fatigue on individuals, not knowing where the money for next month's rent will come from, not knowing how to handle maybe 2 or 3 or 4 children at home using one computer and 2 iPhones, trying to do a full day's worth of schoolwork, all of those things take a toll. So to be able to say, we hear you, we will put you in touch with our clinical, so our licensed clinical social worker, and we'll do what we can to tide you over. That's, I think that's the Irish community in action, showing its true colours.
Couple we get a number of inquiries, and a couple of them have been surprised that at this time, when nobody seems to know whether they are going to be able to return to work, you know, the uncertainty about, you know, where we go, the obviously the undocumented are going to have a much tougher time. But can you just spell out for us the which most people would be surprised for and say, listen, isn't the stimulus package somewhere surely in the midst of all of this the least amount of attention should be the undocumented. This is supposed to benefit everybody. Can you just tell us about how and why, you know, most of these people are not entitled to anything. They're not entitled to unemployment. They're not entitled to any of you know, the normal process that America is and supposed to give to everybody, not just some.
It's a really good question, Adrian, and it could go in many different routes. The bottom line is it's a political decision that has been made at the highest level. It's a very clear message, I think, that the establishment is here to support Americans first and citizens first and those who are documented first. The lack of support available to undocumented individuals, I cannot answer for. Obviously, I'm not in those circles. I have nothing to do with those decisions. All I can do is help mitigate the circumstances that people find themselves in because of the decisions that are made at the highest levels. So because there is no support available, organizations like Solange 2020 exist. If there was support available to undocumented individuals, then we wouldn't be in this situation. But this is just the reality of the current administration, and we do what we can. There's no point in sitting at home and whining about it and wondering, well, why is this the way it is? I can't change it, certainly overnight. We can all change it if we vote with our feet on, you know, when it comes around to election time. But right now, this is the situation. And I guess, who knows what criteria go into those decision-making factors at the time. Yeah. But this is what it is, and this is why we're here and doing what we can. And, you know, you touched on something, the surprise that people are doing something like Sláinte, that an organization like Sláinte exists at a time when there is such a level of uncertainty. For an individual, one individual, single individual, that can pack their bags and go at a moment's notice, it's not the end of the world. But for a family, let's say the individuals who arrived here in New York in the 90s and the early 2000s, 2001, 2002, and have worked hard to establish themselves here in a state like New York, where you work hard and you get rewarded for it. That's the American dream, and that is so possible in a place like New York. Fast forward 20 years, where you have a mother and father working, perhaps he's in construction and she may be working in a bar or home care, maybe a waitress, and they have they've been fortunate enough to get a house, they have a little house, they have a mortgage, they have two or three kids in school. It's very difficult to say to that family, sorry, there's nothing here for you, even though you may have paid into the system, even though you may have a tax ID. It's very difficult to say to that family, you have to pick up and go home. because now they have roots here. They have children who are citizens, and this is you know, part of the reason why we're trying to support everybody, individuals and families. And you know, you can't not feel you know, a level of empathy for these families that have worked hard and have put everything they have back into the system. It's unfortunate that the system isn't there working for them. Excuse me, but we will help them in any way we can. And then that's the other good thing about, you know, the Irish work ethic. Just because you worked as a waitress last year doesn't mean you have to work as a waitress next year. We're very strong people. We have a good work ethic. We're quite flexible. If a position opens up in a different sector, I'm pretty sure that any individual that really wants to stay here will be ready and willing to switch gears pretty quickly. We've already seen that with the number of people that Shane Humphreys has gotten back to work. Individuals who, many of whom had been working in the bar trade up to now, are now working in buildings throughout the city, some doing a level of engineering, may not require a degree, but maybe, you know, servicing air conditioning units or the like. So, you know, that's part of the process. So a little bit of flexibility and a little bit of hope. Where there's a will, there's a way.
So well put. I do want to ask a question that so many people who are undocumented and who are in the area here, we're dealing with, obviously, the COVID-19, the coronavirus. But for those who are already under the kind of stress that we're all under in terms of, you know, of the ever-changing story about, and the least important part of it would be, you know, when the restrictions are lifted. But what about those families? What about those who really need to get to a hospital, but may be very reluctant because of their immigration status?
So that's something that I think can be overcome as long as people remain fully informed. Everybody is entitled to testing in New York. There are testing sites readily. I can't give you the exact number of sites, but I do know that within a short drive of my local community, there are a number of different testing sites, not just in hospitals, but, for example, at the Cross County Shopping Centre, which everybody in the local, you know, 10-mile radius knows about. So to get tested initially, I have to say we're fortunate enough in this area to be able to say that things have improved dramatically since the early days of the coronavirus. With regard to hospital care, as far as I know, nobody can actually be refused. The unfortunate part of this is with the introduction of the latest public charge rule, those that might be in the process of acquiring status or changing their status will not be, they will avoid taking Medicaid assistance, because once you apply for Medicaid, you become, as far as I know, a public charge, and therefore would be in danger of losing your status. So that's an unfortunate situation for anybody to be in. So they're basically faced with the decision of accepting medical assistance, financial assistance for the medical support, or taking on that hefty hospital bill because they don't want to avail of Medicaid, and therefore try not to negatively impact their ability to have full status granted once that the administration reopens and the process returns to normal.
Okay. There is another area that, again, as Irish people, we are indeed very concerned about, but thanks to you know, generations of our upbringing and the tremendous shame that came on families for those, you know, who committed suicide or suicide in the family. a lot of people recently have, recognized either themselves or somebody has recognized that they're teetering on the edge, not particularly of suicide, but of that slippery slope.
Mm-hmm.
And to that end, this is where, the confidence and the safe route is very much a part of Sláinte. I know it's, Solace being the group, but this is the time when actually the confidentiality of those involved in Sláinte is primary to a lot of people.
Absolutely.
That there is not only with all of the other services you provide, but there is an outreach and a recognition that if somebody, even at that level, there should be no reluctance in getting in touch, with Sláinte and on Solace, the group specifically.
Adrian, you've touched on a very pertinent topic. I'll be really honest with you. With regard to mental health care, there's an obvious, unfortunate stigma. But even before that, Irish pride weighs very, very heavily on every man and woman that has left their native Ireland and arrived here with the intention of making their own way in the world. I'll be really honest. I have to say that it's after the first week of accepting applications and making phone calls, I think I cried for 3 hours that first weekend just to get over the... just listening to the harrowing stories of people that I talked to who were apologizing for reaching out, who were apologizing for asking for help, who were ashamed and embarrassed to ask for help, that truly broke my heart. And I understand that's a reality for a lot of people. We all find it hard to ask for help, to have been able to, support your family or maybe even just be working for the last 2 years. These are the very same people that will show up at every fundraiser and benefit for a family in need where there is, you see so often, unfortunately, a family where dad has had a construction accident and can't work for the next 6 months. There's a benefit held in maybe Rory Dolan's or one of the local establishments, and every family in the neighborhood comes by and drops 100 bucks in the bucket. They don't ask. They don't question. They do it because it's the right thing to do. The same people are very reluctant to ask for help because we're not that kind of people. That's not what we grow up with. We grow up with a strong work ethic and a need to be able to take care of ourselves. And most of us are very self-sufficient. So when it comes to asking for help, I think it's one of the most difficult things that I'm speaking specifically about the Irish because that's where most of my experience is. Maybe it's a worldwide phenomenon, I don't know, but I will tell you that Irish Gaelic is alive and well right now amongst the people that we're working with. So once they overcome that, I think they understand that the people that they're talking with are the organizations that are involved in Sláinte, five organizations that have been around for a really long time. I would hope that they have earned their reputation of being worthwhile, have integrity, are honest, have found to be, hold the highest levels of fiduciary responsibility. And our social services component has existed since the very early days of the Aisling Centre, and there is the highest level of professionalism and confidentiality has always been maintained throughout the services, and we bring that through in all of our programs, and I don't think it's any stretch to say that that carries through with the other organizations. And while we're talking to regular individuals, there's no need to mention a name ever. Right. We can go through this process, and of course we will vet every individual that applies. We will make phone calls to make sure that the information that's provided is true and honest. Mm-hmm. And that's how the decision is made based on the need that's presented. But we do have a responsibility to make sure that those that are asking do have a genuine need, and then there are no further questions asked after that. So the level of trust there is implied and understood, and it exists for good reason. We want people, we're regular people, just like, you know, there for the grace of God, it could be me on the other end of this application form writing it out. So I understand, but I truly understand how hard it is for somebody to reach out their hand and say, can you help me? And then when it comes to mental health support, I feel very strongly that there's a huge need to provide good quality service. I'm very happy to say that we're in a position to offer sound, supportive mental health care from the Aisling Centre. And throughout the whole COVID-19 pandemic, we have been in touch with Solace House and offered to, you know, support them in any way we can. And again, that's part of the Irish community coming together, doing what we can to help the people who need it most.
Okay. Now, we need indeed to, as we might say in, you know, your native Galway or Mayo, we need to get down to brass tacks, and that is, you know, to, again, encourage, you know, a lot of those who directly or indirectly, you know, benefited from the charitable ethic of the Irish. And we need to know where we stand in terms of supporting Sláinte. We love any time there is, particularly in humanitarian services, we readily accept, well, you know, there are plenty of foundations and organizations and surely governments do all of this. And in fact, with respect to that, the Irish government has stepped up. But we cannot simply rely in a crisis like this on what could happen, what might happen, when we're talking about not just a once-off, but a problem that is going to be ongoing, and how we fit in as a community. Yeah, million would be terrific, but what can we do towards that? It takes a lot of small donations to make up the kind of money we're talking about. But
It does. And you know what? They all add up. It's been remarkable. It has been truly remarkable. From the very beginning, I would say within 5 days, the steering committee, were absolutely overwhelmed with the level of need that we saw coming in through the applications and the level of support that started to trickle in pretty quickly. And we've reached out to pretty much every sector that we can think of, not necessarily every individual, because, you know, we're limited in what we can do within a day's work or a week's work, and we are working around the clock. But the Irish government has been very responsive, and I'm very proud of the response that we have had. Claire Madden, our Consul General, and his entire staff have worked very hard to support us, and I truly appreciate that. We have local foundations, you know, foundations like the Tower Circle, the GAA, the United Irish Counties. Every county in the United Irish Counties Association has been contacted and asked for support. The Pipe and Band Associations, the individual football teams, Team Aisling, the running club, and, well, you know, Running, Walking, Wellness Club of the Aisling Centre has a virtual 5K ongoing for the month of March. They're on track to raise $30,000. A construction company in the city started a GoFundMe page a couple of weeks ago and thought they might raise $10,000, and now look like they're on track to raise $20,000. So, behind the scenes, we have staff looking at national foundations that might be in a position to support Sláinte because of our community activities to support undocumented and documented individuals, not just documented, through our response to COVID-19. So there are a number of different ways that we're looking at every potential avenue. And like you say, nobody knows. We certainly don't know. But from the most financially significant contribution, right down to we have a couple of $5.25 contribution. I know they're coming from school kids. I've looked at the website where the contributions come through, and I see these names, and I recognize them. There's a kid who has a little babysitting job, and she's just donated $5 or $10, and it all adds up. And to date, we've raised over $300,000. We've dispersed most of that. So it's going out pretty much as quickly as it's coming in, but we won't stop there. And, you know, unfortunately, we are faced with the decision. If we can't raise funds, then we can't continue to support people who really need it. And unfortunately, that decision is out of our hands. But for as long as we can, we'll continue to do whatever we can for as many people as we can. And I think that's as much as we can do. And the one thing I am confident, I've thought very seriously and given a lot of consideration to this. I needed to know for myself that we were doing the right thing. And I debated about it because, again, you wonder whether people are going to be able to, how long can people stay in the country when they're not sure whether or not life will return to normal. We all have to live with the reality that the coronavirus is with us. Until a vaccine is discovered or created, we're all going to have to live with it. So one way or another, we have to find a way to move forward. We can't go back to the way life was. So if that means that we need to look for a job in another sector, then that's what we have to do. So until the city is starting to reopen slowly, the state is starting to reopen, I think smaller cities are being given a little bit more leeway, things will reopen slowly and we'll figure out what the new normal is. And once we figure out what that is, then we'll have to start figuring out a way to move forward. So nobody knows the real answer. Nobody knows how long this will take. But I do know that Sláinte 2020, with support from generous, caring individuals and organizations and businesses and foundations and government support, will continue for as long as we can to help the people that need it. And that's right now the way forward.
There's absolutely nothing that I could add to that other than direct those who are listening, you know, to Sláinte, or for that matter, to any of the organizations, because you're all a group. There is no, as you so readily pointed out, there is no competition. There is no single entity, you know, flying off on their own within Sláinte.
Agreed.
That's the way.
I think the most efficient way would be for anybody who is in a position to support us directly, the simplest way to make a contribution is to go to the website, which is www.Sláinte2020.org, and it's pretty straightforward. Or if you prefer to physically write a check, you can mail a check into Sláinte, care of the Aisling Centre, Aisling Center at 990 McLean Avenue, Yonkers 10705. And for those who may not be in a position to support us directly, but might have thoughts on who we can approach, you know, if you have, through your place of employment, access to a foundation, anybody that's available to send, you know, advice on who else we can contact, we'll be more than happy to work with them.
You know, I didn't get a chance to mention the beginning, and I wanted to make sure we know which way this conversation was going, because I would love to say you were on the right, you came from the right side of the border between Mayo and Galway, but I have to acknowledge, it came before us. We know, and through our own history, even if we start with the famine and move forward, need and the real need, the real, the purpose and the definition of mehel is something that we didn't have to look up. Mehel, people, who particularly in rural Ireland, but throughout, saw a need from a neighbor or of a neighbor, and like you were pointing out, they didn't wait to see if somebody would knock at the door and say, "I need your help." They just did it. They got together, and that is it. And I know you grew up in Williamstown in Galway, and you grew up in a family that didn't get to lounge around and watch much television. Mm-hmm.
That's true. That's true. And actually, one of seven growing up in the country where we had, a little bit of everything and a whole lot of nothing. My mom and dad worked really hard. I would say 18 hours a day, 7 days a week. We had a small farm, we had a grocery store and a bar. And dad's motto was, "There's no union here." So you just did what you had to do. But the other thing he did was, I have to say, I'm very, very thankful to be able to, in our role here in the Ashing Centre, to be able to support Mehel. I think Brian McCabe and Sophie Colgan have done a phenomenal job.
Yes.
And we've had some very generous support here in our own community, and we're happy to be able to open the doors for a couple of hours each Friday to help collect supplies. And I think Mehel and Sláinte are more or less synonymous with each other at this stage. But one of the things my dad did at the end of every night was, even though he never drank behind the bar himself, he would always raise whatever glass he was polishing and say Sláinte to the lads in the bar. And his motto now, he's retired, thankfully, and healthy, and he'll say to you, "If you have your health, you have your wealth." So Sláinte to everybody every night. And it's not a bad way to end the day. If you can, right now, we all have to be conscious and take initiative for, maintaining our own health. But at the end of the day, Sláinte, meaning good health, is here to help for as long as we can. So I would like to wish Sláinte good health to everybody who's listening and say, if you need help, reach out. Go to the website, sláinte2020.org. And if you don't need help and you're in a position to support us, please do. Or if you are not in a position to support us, but know somebody who might be able to, please put us in touch and we will do the rest.
Ah, you're the best. Okay, by the way...
I give a boo.
Yeah. We know, indeed, we've had great experience with your family. Your sister, Karen, came into us in Irish Radio way back when, and she became the office manager, and boy, oh boy, I tell you. You want to talk about an opportunity to lounge around...
non-existent, I'll bet.
Non-existent. I think she brought with her some of the work ethic that you grew up with your father and mother.
Indeed.
All right. Sláinte2020.org. But I'd also like to, to let those know who would perhaps like to get in touch with the Ashling Irish Centre. You're open. Physically, none of the centres are open right now.
Correct.
But you are there and available, as with the New York GAA, the United Irish Counties, New York Irish Centre, Emerald Isle Immigration Centre, and indeed we can include Mehel there as well, with Brian McCabe and the work that they're doing. But there are those who may just want to, as a result of this interview this morning, they may want to get in touch with any of the organizations, but yours, I think, we should let people know. You don't have to be from, McLean Avenue to get in touch with Ashling Irish Center. And again, your new website, which is amazing, is ashlingcenter.org. You have a telephone number.
I do. I have it. And thank you for acknowledging our website. We're very proud of it. It sort of slipped in under the radar. We were getting ready to, before COVID-19 presented itself, we were starting, a new phase here at the Ashling Centre. It's always been very well recognised, and I'm happy to say very well run by my predecessors. And it's entering a new phase of growth because we've literally physically outgrown the space, and we were starting to prepare to raise funds for a new building of all things, increase the capacity of the building here. And the first step was to launch our new website and our new logo, and then lo and behold, we find ourselves working in a completely different direction to help a probably much more worthy cause. Instead of looking for funds for a new building, we were obviously changing direction and fundraising to help people pay their rent and put food in their fridge. But the Ashling Centre is here and will be here when this is all over, please God. And the easiest way to get in touch with us is to call 914-237-5121, or you can, for general inquiries, email info@ashlingcenter.org. That's info@ashlingcenter.org. And then we also have an email address that's geared specifically for any individual that might need a little bit more personalized care. We have a social worker at ashlingcenter.org, and that email goes directly and with confidence in the strictest of confidence to our social worker. So that is socialworker@ashlingcenter.org. And while the staff are not in the office, everybody is set up to work remotely. We'll try to get back to everybody within 24 hours, often a lot sooner. And if we don't have the answer to a question, we'll do what we can to find it. I'll put you in touch with somebody who does have the answer.
Sandra Feeney Charles, Director of the Ashling Irish Centre. You're indeed, thank you for joining us. And it's great. We know what we have to do.
It's been really good to talk to you too, Adrian, I have to say.
Thank you, thanks. And friends, you are listening to Irish Radio Network, USA. Our interviews broadcast live throughout the world and also archived.